Gary Thompson. I'm here with Randy Abrams, and this is the Malware Report. Randy, one of the things that I see more and more in the news is something called rootkits. What are those?
Well, the term has kind of evolved from what initially meant. Rootkits started in the Unix world, where the administrator account, the most powerful account, is called root. The object of a rootkit was to hide the presence of an unauthorized user on the system. If a hacker hacked into your system and you're a Sharp administrator, you're going to notice that there's files that have been changed or missing or processes that are running that shouldn't be there. So what a rootkit would do is hide those files, hide the processes, hide the tracks so the administrator wouldn't see anything abnormal. Nowadays, people pretty much use the term rootkit to mean stealth, any kind of malware that tries to hide itself. But fundamentally, it's software that works at a very low level that masks the presence of itself and other malicious software.
What's the ultimate danger here? Is there something more severe than with other forms of malware?
When you have a rootkit installed on your computer, you don't truly own your computer. With a rootkit, a person can install all manner of software and hide it. So if a person has a keystroke logger on, which will copy all your keystrokes and send them back to someone not at your computer, you won't know that it's there and you won't be able to find it. The operating system won't tell you it's there. You can look in Explorer. You can go to a DOS prompt and do a directory listing. You just won't see those files. You can look in the registry and it'll actually hide registry entries, so you won't see those. So the danger is you can have all kinds of malicious software running on your computer and not know it's there, not be able to find it. Security software, unless it's written to cope with these threats, won't be able to find or remove the rootkits either. And the primary financial use for it is identity theft and information theft, both in terms of getting things like eBay account numbers and bank account numbers, and stealing corporate data that's sensitive that can be used for competitive purposes.
Wow. That's frightening. What can I do to prevent this if I'm an IT manager?
Well, the best way to prevent, really, is going to depend upon your environment, but it ultimately comes down to restricting what programs are run, whether it's by the choice of the user, learning to only install trusted software and what to trust and what not to trust, or IT policy. In some organizations, they have whitelists, and only the whitelisted programs are allowed to run, which is something that you can do with Windows administrative tools. But if you're downloading software because someone says this is like a cool game and you don't actually know who they are or know that they know enough about security to have thought about where they got it from, you could be putting yourself at risk. If you go out looking for free software on the internet, even legal free software, like free smileys and things like that, a lot of it contains spyware, and oftentimes rootkits are embedded in the spyware too. So the biggest prevention is going to be to be careful about what you download and run. Windows Vista will help by having people run in user mode. If they get infected with a rootkit in user mode, they can still log off and log in as an administrator, and then the anti-malware software products like Nod32 can very easily detect the rootkits because they are not active. When they're not active, they're easy to detect. You also want to use products like Nod32 that have anti-stealth technology, because even if you're running in user mode, prevention is the best cure, and Nod32 is able to identify rootkits and also remove them.
Well, once I'm infected, what can I do? I mean, is there something that, as an IT manager, I what is the solution once I've discovered I've got rootkits in my system?
Honestly, the best solution is to completely rebuild that computer.
Oh,
if there's a rootkit on the computer,
did you say completely? Wait. Did you say completely rebuild my computer?
If absolute security is what you're after.
Oh
yes.
My gosh!
At Microsoft, if your computer was infected with anything, even if they know that it wasn't something that steals passwords or things like that, anything, policy was that you could back up your data, but you had to flatten the computer and completely rebuild it from scratch. And that applied for everyone in every position at Microsoft. And that's because once the computer's been compromised like that, you might know what your anti-malware software has reported to you, but it's impossible to detect 100% of all viruses and all malware at the exact time that it's deployed. So you might not know what else is on there. But what's often missed in terms of the instructions of what to do is it's extremely important to then change your passwords, because it does no good to rebuild your system and use the same password if a remote attacker already has your username and password to get right back in and continue what they were doing.
Yeah.
So it's critical that you change your password and use strong passwords too.
What do you mean by a strong password?
The most important aspect of a strong password really is length. In terms of brute force, the longer the password is, the more time it takes to crack. So if I'm using a brute force password cracker, a 7-character password isn't going to take me much time at all. But each additional character exponentially raises the complexity of trying to crack a password. So if you have a password that's 15 or 20 characters long, it's going to be much more secure than the most complex 8-character password. One of the tips is to use both upper and lowercase letters, to use numbers, to use special symbols like punctuation marks. Now, there are some tricks to be able to create long, memorable passwords. One of the tricks I like are mathematical equations. How hard is it for you to remember 8 plus 8 equals 16? Now, that's not my password, but that's really easy to remember. But you could spell it. The first 8 could be lowercase E-I-G-H-T.
Oh, that makes
sense. Use the plus sign. You can use the number 8 for the second 8.
Mm-hmm.
You can spell out equal with the capital E and spell out 16.
Well, that makes a lot of sense. If I'm an IT manager, how often should I get my organization to change its passwords?
That's going to be directly related to how long and complex the passwords are. The longer and more complex the passwords, the more time you have. So probably on average, for a reasonable password policy, something in excess of 12 characters, probably about 3 months.
I'm assuming here that if I'm prompted the computer prompts me to remember my password, that I probably shouldn't do that?
No, that's a really bad practice, because then the computer has to store it somewhere. If it's doing it right, it's going to be stored in an encrypted form, but encryption can be broken, and keeping the password, it's like writing it down on a piece of paper that you can see from the internet.
Yeah, great. I can hardly remember my anniversary. Now I've got to remember my password. What about keeping the same password across all of my accounts? Is that dangerous?
That can be dangerous. It really depends on the organization. You certainly don't want to have the same password for every user in the company. Generally, the machines that you use to perform administrative types of functions, you're going to want to have different passwords for those.
Mm-hmm.
And one other tip on the complex or long passwords is you can use sentences. Actually, the space character is a valid character in a password. So, you know, the quick brown fox, you know, you start getting pretty long passwords.
It was a dark and stormy night.
Yeah. And one other tip is to use one or more spaces at the end of the password, because you can actually write the password down, and if someone doesn't know their spaces after it, they'll type it in if they find it, and it won't work.
No, that makes a lot of sense. I think I'll put that into play right away, because it sounds like the rootkit, if I've got it, frankly, I'm not interested in rebuilding my entire computer, nor would I want to if I had, you know, 500 or 1,000 computers that I had to be able to deal with. And it does sound like one of the issues is which employees are going to do, you know, trading information, downloading information. Do you recommend blocking specific sites?
I think it's a valid approach. Different organizations have different needs and different kinds of sites that they're going to want to block, and there's usually going to be some exceptions in some organizations that some employees have to be able to get to certain sites. It certainly can be part of a layered defense that can help promote security.
Good. Well, thanks again, Randy. This has been very enlightening for me. I got to go back and change my password, and now that I know what a rootkit is, I'm not sure I feel better or worse, but clearly having a good solution from a malware company is going to be something I hopefully will help me out. So again, this is Gary Thompson and Randy Abrams with the Malware Report, and if you have questions, we're getting quite a few, please send them to, and Randy, your email address is?
Abrams@eset.com
Terrific. Thanks again.